What makes a great pair of glasses? At Warby Parker, it's all the invisible extras without the extra cost. Their designer quality frames start at $95, including prescription lenses, plus scratch-resistant, smudge-resistant, and anti-reflective coatings, and UV protection, and free adjustments for life. To find your next pair of glasses, sunglasses, or contact lenses, or to find the Warby Parker store nearest you, head over to warbyparker.com. That's warbyparker.com.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
So glad you're here. Brian Kilmeade Show moving ahead. It's going to be a big week. We're going to end with Saturday at the Florida Theater in Jacksonville. It'll be streamed on Fox Nation. Get a chance to see a lot of our radio listeners in person. It's going to be great. This hour, we're going to be joined by Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. And today, the president's going to be accepting his next leader right after Netanyahu was the first. It's going to be King Abdullah II of Jordan and his wife today, the Crown Prince of Jordan. Perfect timing, too, because you have a situation in Gaza that's evolving rapidly. And Secretary of State Hegseth is over in Germany right now. And it's going to be interesting what's happening there. J.D. Vance is in France. The word about Trump and his administration and the fact that Trump can trust everyone to trumpet his policies has got to be a relief. A lot different than the first time. So let's get to the big three, and then we'll get to the meat of the story.
Number three.
They ought to be returned by 12 o'clock on Saturday, and if they're not returned, all of them. Saturday at 12 o'clock, all hell is going to break out.
Yep, there we go. Back to hell. Trump vows to end the ceasefire in Gaza. If all hostages aren't back by Saturday, massive aid cuts to Egypt and Jordan if they don't take in some of the homeless Palestinians.
Number two.
I think this is the most serious constitutional crisis the country has faced, certainly since Watergate. The president is attempting to seize control of power and for corrupt purposes.
Right. That's Senator Chris Murphy. Yes, it's really tough when the president wants to get our budget in order, which is $37 trillion over budget. Doge bulldozing ahead. His courts and Democrats try anything and everything to get in his way. When are they going to realize his agenda is saving our government? It's not saving the Republican Party.
Number one.
This is a big week. We have Tulsi Gabbard and Bobby Kennedy Jr. up in front of us today. I think those are probably the two toughest hurdles we've got going on. Cash Patel will be a little bit of a hurdle as well, but I think we're making excellent progress. I think we have the votes.
Yeah, Trump train picking up speed, popularity too. Controversy is being handled as Tulsi is now one step away from being the director of national intelligence. RFK Jr. right afterwards should get confirmed. The major difference this time from last time is Trump has a staff that's fighting for him, not against him. They were competent. I'm not saying anything wrong with General Kelly and General Mattis. They just didn't like the president and were fighting against him. And that's why President Trump's approval rating is so high. He's taking on things that are controversial. Usually when you do that, pay kind of a price for your popularity. The reason why he's not this time is, number one, is some of the things he's doing is just so obviously the right thing to do. And number two is a lot of these other men and women are doing the fighting. I mean, Kristi Noem's taking on the fight on CNN when it comes to the border and when it comes to putting these illegals into Gitmo that are criminals that countries don't want to take them back. And we got to make sure they don't come back. And then when you have taking on government spending and looking into programs and horrible grants and DEI, it's not just Trump saying it, it's J.D. Vance saying it, it is Marco Rubio proclaiming it, and it is Kristi Noem, as I mentioned, and Tom Holman. And we're talking about cutting things, but it's coming from multi-areas and multi-corners of Washington. And I think Trump's got to be relieved by that. I mean, he could truly be a leader now and not Mr. Everything. So the MAGA mandate's pretty strong. The approval of how President Trump was handling the job, 70% among those people who voted for him, they believe he's following through on his campaign promises. That's pretty good, don't you think? How about this? Overall approval rating, 53%. For Trump, that's like everybody else, 80%. And his overall job approval of men and women under 30. How about 55%? Think about that, 55%. So meanwhile, he's taken out his enemies in every way possible. He told Secretary of State Anthony Blinken, Letitia James, Alvin Bragg, Norm Eisen, Mark Zaid, Lisa Monaco, Andrew Weissman, Jake Sullivan, you have lost your security clearances. He doesn't trust them. He remembers last time. He remembers John Kerry over there talking to French leaders saying, don't worry, Trump's going to be impeached. I know, we hate his foreign policy too. Telling the Iranians, don't worry, this guy's going to be out of here soon. Just don't build a nuclear weapon, even though Trump ripped up the deal because it was a terrible deal that John Kerry cut. So he's saying, I'm not going to give you security clearances so these leaders will know that you don't know what you're talking about. The other ones are pretty much just payback. I mean, Letitia James has made a career trying to fight Donald Trump and embarrass him. She's failed spectacularly, but we'll see how that goes. The big story in Washington right now is DOGE. What they're doing in there is blowing up things that just aren't effective, getting rid of programs that cost too much, and misusing federal funds. I'll give you an example. So when President Trump takes over, he says, let's stop all this aid until we can get further notice. Okay. So he is cracking down illegal immigrants. He's trying to get North Carolina rebuilt. And someone writes a check for $59 million to New York City for their illegal immigrant population. Now, New York needs it. It's the federal government's fault. But Joe Biden told them to go jump in a lake and said, the mayor, you're cut off. So $8 billion or $12 billion it costs. $59 million is a short-term loan or short-term grant. But he was told not to write that check. And if anything, don't you think it should go to North Carolina, damaged by that Helene hurricane that has damaged their roads? These people can't get into a home. They were going to take their trailers away, temporary trailers away, and they can't get through their roads. So he's just fired four people who signed off on it. And that's the story. Look at what they found. Look at what DOGE has found. Please tell me where this is unpopular. 89 Departments of Education contracts they got rid of. 29 Department of Education DEI grants, $101 million worth. From FEMA, the $59 million I told you for New York City hotels to house migrants, got rid of that. $17 million project giving tax policy advice to Liberia. We're not going to do that anymore. Why would we do that? Why $17 million? If someone wants to volunteer, go ahead. Make it part of your program to start spreading the J.P. Morgan advice or the H.R.R. Block advice on handling taxes. $9 million for Central America Gender Assessment Services. $1.5 million to observe operations at a mail center. $1.5 million. This is what DOGE is finding. And then they say, these people are too young. We don't know who they are. They're not bothered. They shouldn't be looking at this stuff. Really? Since when do you have to be a certain age to look at information that you were hired by a president to do under a department? Now, is Tom Homan, because he's a czar, could he not do everything the head of the Border Patrol would do? Well, if you had a problem with you don't have a problem with Tom Homan. You don't say, wow, he's overstepping his bounds. You made him border czar. National Security Advisor Michael Waltz. If he starts doing stuff and looking at Treasury information, is that going to be a problem because he's not a cabinet secretary? Or when you say idiotic things like he wasn't elected, it's only two people elected, the president and vice president. So they're trying to stop them in every way they can. They're trying to stop the birthright citizenship. They're suing. They're trying to stop the freezing of foreign funds. They're suing. They're trying to stop the USAID funding. They're suing. And they're finding some success in halting this stuff. For example, the president of the United States said through DOGE, let's offer these guys 6 months' pay and just resign. Write us back and say, our federal workforce is too big. So if you want to resign, we'll give you 6 months' severance. And they wrote back, 65,000 said, I'll take you up on that. And of course, the union sues to put a hold on this, saying the president doesn't have any right to do it. Since when? He can shrink the federal workforce. Why? We have a reason. This isn't you to year 2000, where Bill Clinton, to his credit, along with Newt Gingrich and Republicans, balanced the budget. We have that tape. Balanced the budget. But instead, as he's going in there, looking at all this wasteful spending, to be generous. All the Democrats see is a fight. Listen to Chris Murphy, this histrionics here, cut 13.
I think this is the most serious constitutional crisis the country has faced, certainly since Watergate. The president is attempting to seize control of power and for corrupt purposes. The president wants to be able to decide how and where money is spent so that he can reward his political friends, he can punish his political enemies. That is the evisceration of democracy.
I mean, do you see what I'm talking about? They'll point out billionaires because Musk is successful. You hear Trump talk. He doesn't even know why Elon Musk is doing this. He asked for this job. I listened to the, I don't know what they call it now when X goes online live. So they're, yeah, called Spaces and never really works, right? And I'm listening to Trump and Elon Musk talk. And Trump was talking to him. He says, you know what I'd like to do? The government's got to be more efficient. Trump says, yeah. He said, well, I'd love to be ahead of that. He goes, you want to do that? You can do that. All right. That's how it happened. And that's when Trump came out. He goes, I don't know why he wants to do it. I don't know how he has time to do it. Here's Kevin Hassett. So Kevin Hassett is director of National Economic Council. He's brilliant. Gets Trump. Always has. He's on CNBC. And he says, what is partisan about this? Cut 16.
So what's going on is that we have antiquated computer systems that make it hard for people to do their jobs and follow up the things that taxpayers and these former Treasury secretaries want them to do. And I don't know how many exact DOGE employees there are in the Treasury Department. You could ask the Treasury Secretary, but I don't think you could count them on one hand. And they're just helping people get good computer systems so that we can check and see what the numbers really are. And the point is, why is everybody so anxious and upset about the fact that we're going to get to the bottom of what we're spending our money on? Why is that a partisan thing?
I don't get it either. I really don't. They're just saying, well, no one's consulting me, and we're doing that not through legislation. Enough. So what? They're going to get to education. You're not going to be happy about that. We're going to see all agenda-driven stuff. And look, if they're a Republican, what's a traditional Republican thing? I guess you would say pro-life. If there were programs promoting pro-life federal programs in Central and South America and in Africa, I'd say we shouldn't be wasting our money on that. If you have a mission through the Catholic Church, do it through the Catholic Church or Protestant Church, whatever it is, go ahead. But I don't think there should be federal funds on that. And if Trump found some of that, he should make it public. Look, you know how I feel on pro-life, but I don't think we should be spending money on this. And I think that would go a long way to diffusing this the pushback, which, look, they've been effective in getting courts, partisan courts, to slow them down, but they're not putting an end to it. And there is such an aggression for people who are trying to get in the way of an agenda or what the administration's trying to do. I dare anyone to try it. He also went in and did something that I know Mick Mulvaney was talking about when he was at Office of Management and Budget, OMB. He has gotten rid of, the president has, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. That is an Obama idea that Elizabeth Warren pushed forward, which has been nothing but a hindrance to business. Nearly 1,700 employees of that division were told Monday, don't come to work. USAID, huge budget, doesn't answer anyone. Senator Joni Ernst said in editorial today. She said, in 2005, Congress caught the agency supporting an organization involved with trafficking of teenage girls. USAID also funded $42 million worth of bat research in Wuhan, $9 million in aid for Syrians, which ended up in the hands of terrorists. They don't want to answer any questions. And I bring you to Governor George Pataki, now head of Ukraine Relief Group. He is all for what Trump's doing with USAID. He set up a relief fund to help Ukrainians, and he knew the USAID was there. He said that he backs Trump's move to get the far-left international USAID agency out. They were absolutely no help, he said. He asked to get heaters and everything into the theater to help the Ukrainians. And what happened is they did nothing. They wouldn't help him at all. They wanted nothing to do with him, wouldn't return any calls. And as far as he could tell, they weren't even helping the Ukrainians. So he's saying, why would anybody be protecting him? He told John Castamatidis over the weekend. We should get George Pataki on here. I'd love to hear more about what he was trying to do. And certainly it's a Republican that was running against Trump for the nomination at one point. Remember that. So we're seeing a lot of this. USAID had their name stripped from a building, had their lease canceled. Their employees were told to turn away. You may want to slow down the release of 20,000, 10,000 people, but Trump says I'm only taking about 1,000 and they're going to be answering to my Secretary of State. I love it. I actually don't want an aid organization, federally funded, not working with the State Department. Either did Warren Christopher during the Clinton years. Either did Al Gore during the Clinton years. To a degree, he wanted to reform the agency. They got too powerful and they couldn't be stopped. Isn't that crazy? So what Trump's just trying to do is get the financial house in order. Next stop is going to be the Pentagon. I'm sure there's going to be huge pushback there. So maybe my answer is this. If they have such a problem of Musto's team without security clearances, which, by the way, get them, go security clearances because they're young and they don't dress in suits and ties, looking at these things and thinking that private information could be revealed to them, like we want Social Security numbers. As Jonathan Turley told me today, he's like, it's not a big deal having Social Security numbers available, even if you're young and work for Elon Musk. Have someone from Treasury right next to him. So Scott Bessent put a guy or a woman right next to the Doge team, have them in there in the area, and just have them going over them, make sure that these guys are looking at payments and looking at invoices coming in on the federal government needs to be examined. We have to fight. Don't just say I'm against fraud and abuse. He's actually stopping it. And they don't want to talk about the programs he's getting rid of. They want to talk about Elon Musk and a billionaire. I hope the American people are smarter than that. I think they showed in the election they are. They elected common sense even more than a conservative. That's what we're seeing now. 1-866-408-7669. When we come back, I'm going to go to Raleigh, North Carolina, then over to Dallas. Don't move. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Taking America back.
Our long national nightmare is over.
One executive order at a time.
I ended the paper straw.
You! Okay, he's right on this one.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
This episode is brought to you by PDS Debt. Struggling with credit cards, personal loans, medical bills, or collections? It's time to stop worrying about that high interest debt you've got piling up. PDS Debt can help you start saving money immediately. Their platform can analyze your unique situation and create a plan to get you out of debt. There's no minimum credit score required, and it takes 30 seconds to get your results. With PDS Debt, you'll take back control of your finances. Get a free debt analysis in just 30 seconds at pdsdebt.com/Spotify.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, thanks so much, everybody. Lieutenant Colonel West is coming up shortly. At the bottom of the hour. I mean, think about this. The Texas border. Last year at this time, 8,000 came through on Sunday. 8,000 in one day. You know how many came through this Sunday? 300. I mean, this is unbelievable. And some of the stories are exactly what we've heard. People that are experts at the border talk about the publicity being as important as the enforcement. And the one thing we heard from Henry Cuellar, who's a Democrat with a good head on his shoulders when it comes to immigration, he says, we have to see if the Biden administration is sending people out like they said. You need to see the video. You need to see the video of them getting back on planes, being held up and turned around, because that gets through the Middle East quickly. So not only seeing the video, the word is getting out. So the New York Post has a story today. Authorities in Honduras last week discovered a group of 28 migrants from Venezuela and Cuba traveling south to Nicaragua. And another group of 23 from Honduras, Venezuela, Panama, and El Salvador turning back from Mexico. Why? Because the migrant encounters are showing that people are being turned away. They're being stopped from crossing, and the remain in Mexico and the catch and release are over. So people like to say, well, we're doing that. It doesn't matter. Listen. Everything, just note, there are times when Trump's going to say stuff or there's going to be a policy in theory that isn't executed correctly. Can we please all collectively admit that this is exactly what's working? If this works for a year, we're going to all get to the point where we're going to agree on this. There's going to be, a massive expansion of work visas where workers come in. They have to be paid at a reasonable rate, not driving down rates of people already with jobs. America becomes more productive. People have an opportunity. And we track the people with maybe work visas can be converted some type of citizenship. And then I like the H-1 program to be converted for the first round draft picks from Stanford and others that they get to stay with the right incentives. But you can't do it unless you crack down first. And that's what we're doing.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
A vote in favor of her confirmation is an endorsement of President Trump's lawless efforts to hollow out our national security workforce. And her confirmation will further strain the alliances that have kept our country safe for decades. Therefore, I urge my colleagues to oppose Ms. Gabbard's nomination.
Nobody's listening to Mark Warner. Remember, Mark Warner lost all credibility when he told us for 4 years that Russia bought and sold Trump. And I don't know why Richard Burr said nothing. He was the majority leader at the time. So he lost all credibility with me. And with Tulsi Gabbard, great news for her. She even got Senator Murkowski to vote. And I'm sure when it goes to the general audience, they're going to get 100 votes. So they beat Cloture yesterday. And now she's going to get voted in as DEI. Couldn't come soon enough. We've got so much going on here. Over in the on the West Coast, do you know that the FBI on the West Coast Division was tipping? There's been the accusation they've been tipping off illegal immigrants that ICE is coming. I mean, do you believe this? Kash Patel can't get there quick enough. And Tom Holman said it yesterday. Not a guy to really go with conspiracy theories. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West joins us now. Colonel, first off, great to hear. Great to talk to you again. Your reaction to Mark Warner's thoughts about Tulsi Gabbard.
Well, again, you just brought a key point out in that the hypocrisy is laughable if it weren't so serious. Where were these individuals for the last 4 years when we saw all of these intelligence failures, when we saw, you know, all the turmoil that we have seen across the globe, and also to include what we've seen come across our border to the country, and the fact that we don't have intelligence agencies that are able to track all of these individuals that are terrorists, Trendiragua, and all the other threats to our country and to our homeland. So what the Democrats like Mr. Warner continue to do is they really continue to show that they don't care about the safety and security of this country. They only care about ideological agendas, and they only care about being in control, even if it means to the detriment of the safety and security of our constitutional republic and the American people.
Yeah, we're going to find out. I think she's going to get through. The surprise she's going to get through because of the pushback so many people gave her?
Well, again, I think what has happened is that the Democrats comported themselves so horribly during these confirmation hearings. And I think it's still the spine of many Republicans to say that I'm not going to side myself with these people, except for what you saw with Mitch McConnell and Murkowski and Susan Collins with the issue of Pete Hegseth. But I don't think that after that you have seen anyone have a difficult time. And I think Kash Patel is going to end up getting confirmed as well, because we know that the FBI has gotten a little bit rotten to the core, not condemning all of the agents, but there's something wrong at the core. And you just talked about it. How interesting it is that we have the FBI tipping off criminal illegal immigrants about the actions of ICE. This is unconscionable.
And is right. Tom Holman says he is accusing the FBI of putting officers' lives at risk by leaking ICE details about where the next raid is going to take place. Says the operation will be led by ICE. They announced it. I don't know if they announced this technically, but they said in the next few weeks they're going to have a massive roundup, and they're going to need FBI agents with them to round up all these illegal criminals who are being, you know, being protected by the governor, by the mayors all across that city outside Newport and Huntington Beach. And now you have, I'm watching video this morning of the state college system. All these, they're combining to protest for the Palestinians, for Hamas, and for the illegal immigrants. That whole state is upside down as they lose Chevron. Over 100,000 employees, and Chevron has moving out and going to Texas. So all this stuff is happening. Half of Los Angeles is burned to the ground, and they're going to bat for ICE and going to bat against ICE and spending $30 million to Trump-proof their state to get legal teams ready.
And oh, by the way, Gavin Newsom wants the American taxpayer to bail out that state, the state that is, you know, proudly to say that they're a sanctuary state for criminal illegal immigrants, period. A state that, as you just mentioned, is going in the wrong direction. A state that is spending money to, quote unquote, try to shelter itself from the duly elected president of the United States of America. So, again, the left, the Democrats, are building such a massive case against them that I postulate that they are pushing themselves into political exile in the United States of America.
I hope so, because to fight against Elon Musk and keep calling him a billionaire as if it was former prisoner, murderer. I mean, you understand that the guy had nothing. came over here with nothing and took tremendous risk. He's one of America's smartest people that we imported. That's a first-round draft pick. I'm glad's around. But what he's doing is nothing but getting our house in order and getting rid of the political correct programs and who they don't want to specifically back. You don't want to, you know, we're financing an opera in Ireland. We're financing all these crazy stuff. And no one wants to take on those because they're unpopular. But they want to say Elon Musk is gutting the gutting all these programs. But they don't want to go into individual waste. Here is Andy Kim on Meet the Press yesterday, the Democrat from New Jersey on Sunday, I should say. He says threatening a government shutdown over the Trump's illegal actions with Doge. Cut 11.
Are you prepared to shut down the government to join Democratic colleagues who want to stand in the way of keeping the government open?
Well, you have to look at what the Trump administration is doing right now. They are simply trying to dismantle the government. So yes, look, if we have to take steps to be able to hold them accountable, use the leverage that we have to force it, I cannot support efforts that will continue this lawlessness that we're seeing when it comes to this administration's actions.
So what is he even talking about?
Look, first and foremost, I think that there's a little class in civics or the Constitution that needs to be taught to some of these Democrat members of the House and the Senate. When you go to Article 2 of the Constitution, the very first sentence, it says that executive power is vested into who? The President of the United States. So in other words, Article 2, which talks about the executive branch, the executive power is vested in the President. He is in charge of the executive branch. That means all the government agencies and bureaucracies. He is the one that can go in and decide to right-size the federal government and based upon his constitutional duties and responsibilities. What these leftists are saying and what you just heard this Representative Kim say, he's dismantling government. He's going in there and taking away all of our pet projects. He's, you know, uncovering all of the corruption, all of the nepotism, the cronyism, all of the fraud, waste, and abuse. And we don't like that. We don't like someone coming in and tearing down the temples of our false god of big government. That's the message that they are sending. And at some point in time, people like Representative Kim needs to understand he just gave a 30 to 60 second soundbite for a commercial that will run for the midterm elections coming up.
I think so. I'm watching. There's so much. I'm watching Senator Chris Murphy. I never thought, you know, he's not somebody I would vote for, but there are certain things that he came on board with. And I was kind of I never thought he'd be leading the charge of insanity against this. I never thought that Chuck Schumer would be screaming on the steps every day. And now they set up a snitch line for anybody who sees anything that Musk's team is doing, Doge team is doing, that they want to come out. And of course they're going to come out. They're going to say that they told them these people got 15 minutes. And Musk does this in his jobs, all his companies. Give me 15. You got 15 minutes with the boss. Tell me what you do. And they were taking their 15 minutes, and they couldn't even explain what they were doing. A lot of them getting fired on the spot. And they were talking about some of the people firing them were like 25 years old, and it bothered them. But welcome to the private sector. You better produce. Mm-hmm. And by the way, if you are somebody who thinks you have untapped potential, you feel like you're functioning without getting any spotlight, this is your moment. This is your moment to stand up and say, listen how we could fix this place. And you don't think go ahead.
Isn't it amazing how during the Biden-Harris administration, if someone came up and, quote unquote, a whistleblower and talked about some of the things they saw in the Biden-Harris administration, the left attacked them. Now, all of a sudden, when you have the Trump administration, they're asking for whistleblowers to come forward. And so, again, this hypocrisy is something that is blatantly playing out. The American people see it. The media can't cover for them anymore because they're losing, the leftist media is, they're losing any interest or market share. Look at how their ratings are plummeting. So folks are listening for the truth. And you're right. This is being run like a business. And in a business, if you say, I don't want to come into work, and then you're told by the boss you have to come into work, then if you don't come into work, you're fired. And especially when it is you and I, the American taxpayer, that are paying for your job. And so the whole thing also, when you look at these unions who are now trying to sue the Trump administration, how dare these unions think that they can collectively bargain with the American taxpayer dime? That is another bit of hypocrisy that I don't understand. So this whole scheme that the left has created up there in Washington, D.C., where 96% of Washington, D.C. voted for Kamala Harris, they're starting to see it, as Representative Kemp say, being dismantled.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by it. I mean, the programs that are just that we're paying for, the American people need to know. I mean, for the first time, we have a forensic accountant going over our payables, what we're paying and what we're taking in, what we have to pay and what we're paying out. So I would welcome this. If there's some nuanced thing where a Treasury representative has to be there, do it. Scott Bessent, you have to sit there. People in Treasury could sit there with Doge and make sure that people's personal data isn't being abused by some person who has this horrible affliction of being young, which I never knew how bad it was to be young until the Democrats started talking about. And if you look at Trump's approval ratings for people under 30, 55%.
Yeah.
So that means the 78-year-old and the Republican Party, where young people evidently it's not cool, it's gotten cool. They kind of like the guy.
No, Brian, remember that movie Dave with Kevin Kline when he was the imposter president
and
came into the White House? Remember how he got his friend, just everyday accountant Charles Grodin, and they came in and they went through the federal budget like overnight, line by line, and they found all of that fraud, waste, and abuse. And the next day he confronted, you know, members of his cabinet on camera. That's what's happening right now. So I guess life is kind of imitating art in that instead of Charles Grodin, the real person we have is Elon Musk. We call it Doge. And they're going through the books of the federal government and look what they're exposing. So if people haven't seen that movie, Dave, you should watch that movie and watch that little portion where they sat down overnight and went through the budget.
Right.
Because the American people deserve that type of transparency.
So let me ask them, with all this stuff coming, I mean, everything from getting rid of straws to getting rid of the penny. What is it like for you? Is there anything that you've seen that the president's doing you thought to yourself, I wouldn't have done that?
You know, not really, because I think the most important thing is, from a strategic perspective, you've got to take advantage of the momentum that you have. You have to go on offense. And I think right now, for the first time ever, we are seeing the Democrat Party in a complete disarray. They don't have a leadership. They don't have an azimuth. They don't have a way forward. And they're kind of like the people that were stricken blind in Sodom and Gomorrah. They're just running around without any vision whatsoever.
Yeah, the only thing I don't like taking away the security clearances for Brian Hook, for Mike Pompeo. You know, I understand I wouldn't take it for John Bolton either. I know he's been a harsh critic, because I just don't want – I want – if someone's going to take a risk for me, even if they dislike, you know, decide they dislike me afterwards, I don't want their families to be susceptible. So that I wouldn't have done that. I don't get it either.
Maybe
with
you'll revisit. Maybe, well, you know, there's a little bit of personality stuff there, I'm sure, but maybe he'll revisit that. But I do agree with the 51 intelligence, quote unquote, individual revoking theirs, and General Milley once again, because they don't have a need to know. But you do have to make sure that you're protected. Or Anthony Fauci, he doesn't need U.S. Marshal protection.
Yeah, I vividly remember John Kerry traipsing through Europe telling everyone and Iranians, don't worry, Trump's going to be impeached. You won't have to deal with him for long. Don't take him seriously. And he was getting read in. I don't want him being read in. I want everyone to know if these guys are and ladies are talking, Jake Sullivan on down, they're just talking out of memory. They're not read in. And they don't have an inside source, because they need to know that this party is actually in power. But
no, that's right. And Donald Trump is commanding the moral high ground right now. And I think he's doing very well at it
and enjoying it. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, thanks so much.
Always a pleasure. Take care, Brian.
Dallas County Republican Party Chair, American Constitutional Rights Union Executive Director. We come back. I'm going to go, I promise. Raleigh, Dallas, and then Arizona. Don't move.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Congratulations to the people of Philadelphia, who immediately celebrated their victory by attacking their own city, killing their own city. Die, Philadelphia. They were mashing their own city, doing tens of dollars worth of damage. Yeah, that's right. I'm implying it's give Saquon back. But of course, my favorite moment was the inexplicable post-victory horse race, where the winner stands triumphant atop the steps of the Philadelphia Art Museum. That's not Photoshop. That's the horse ran up the steps of the Philadelphia Art Museum, reared up on its hind legs, and went, Adrian!
So, yeah, I was watching The Daily Show last night. I think The Daily Show on Mondays, anyway, seems to get it. Not a fan, but kind of being rational, the American people spoke. So if you're out there, Stephen Colbert, watch your buddy Jon Stewart. Harold, listen on WPTF in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hey, Harold.
Thank you, sir, for taking my call. I called your show about 7-8 years ago when this illegal immigration was kind of under control, but when AOC was at the fence crying and screaming about illegal immigration, I said, ship these people to the richest zip code in America. I said that 8 years ago. I see you're kind of easy on Eric Adams with this DOJ thing coming down. It was up to me. I would let it play out because he was waving people in. He was greeting people. He was giving people $1,500 a month for food. He went after the retirees' health care to save $600 million. He went after our health care to pay for illegal immigrants. It wouldn't have happened if the mayor was Republican and the president was a Democrat.
That's true. Let me just touch on that, Harold. Good point. I would say this. Eric Adams, not close to perfect. I mean, I don't look at him like I do other people and Democrats or Republicans who stand up to their party. Like what Fetterman has done has been phenomenal. I don't put him in that category. But I compare him to de Blasio, and I compare him to when de Blasio and Cuomo targeted Trump. They spray paint the streets as Letitia James goes after him with a $450 billion or million-dollar fine on a company that was doing nothing but growing the city. And he sees nothing but attacks, and Eric Adams never went after him. Trump is very appreciative of that. Number two is when it came down to the final weeks of the election, he wouldn't put up with the whole fascist statement. And number three, he did make a mistake saying welcoming these people on the buses. But he quickly changed and said it's got to stop. And then the federal government, next thing you know, they isolate him, and now they're suing him. And the stuff that they're claiming, I'm talking to people, yeah, he's not perfect, but this is not a big deal. It's not how you indict the first sitting mayor of New York. Let's go to Chris real quick in Arizona. Chris.
Hi, this is Crispin from Phoenix, Arizona. The thing I want to mention is getting after waste and stuff, that's great. I'm a liberal Democrat, but the way to do it is you have a Congress. Yeah, they have the majority in Congress now. You present it to the Congress, you can pass things. And
tried that before, and nobody wants to give up these programs. They don't. They all want to fight for their programs, and the lobbyists sadly play a big role with both parties. So you can't dissolve a division, but you can dissolve programs.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're here. Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way. This hour is going to be busy. Andy McCarthy is ready for us. He has to unwind all what these judges are doing to stop the Trump legislation, what Doge can and can't do. The greatest legal challenge is going forward. Greg Palcott will update us from Israel because we know Saturday the president made a deadline. Get all the hostages out by Saturday or all hell breaks loose. Wow. He said, I could be circumvented by Netanyahu, but in my view. And then at 51, we're going to do a simulcast on FBN, and we'll talk a little about the Trump interviews over the last 2 days. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
They ought to be returned by 12 o'clock on Saturday, and if they're not returned, all of them, Saturday at 12 o'clock, all hell is going to break out.
Back to hell. Trump vows to end the ceasefire. Egypt and Jordan, if you don't get along, get on board and partake in some Palestinians, you're going to lose a lot of aid. And guess who's here today? King Abdullah of Jordan.
Number two.
I think this is the most serious constitutional crisis the country has faced, certainly since Watergate. The president is attempting to seize control of power and for corrupt purposes.
This guy's out of his mind. Senator Chris Murphy has lost it. Doge bulldozing ahead as courts and Democrats tried to do anything and everything to get in his way, and they've frozen about four or five programs. When are they going to realize his agenda is saving our government? We have to get down from $39 trillion in debt.
Number one.
This is a big week. We have Tulsi Gabbard and Bobby Kennedy Jr. up in front of us today. I think those are probably the two toughest hurdles we've got going on. Cash Patel will be a little bit of a hurdle as well, but I think we're making excellent progress. I think we have the votes.
Yep, Senator Marshall weighing in. The Trump train picking up speed, popularity, and controversy as Tulsi is one step closer to confirmation. And RFK should follow right afterwards this week. Cash Patel is in their wake. The major difference this time in the Trump staff than the last time with the Trump staff is they're not fighting against him. They're all in. Andrew McCarthy joins us now. Andy, you know what's so amazing is that what Trump's trying to do is not push his policy. He's trying to get the government fiscally in order, pointing out ridiculous policies, examining everything. And yet the Democrats are getting angrier and angrier, and they're finding some sympathetic judges.
Well, yeah, but we knew they'd do that, right? I mean, they don't want this all exposed because this is what they've built for, you know, over a half a century. And, you know, this is how they... This is how you basically orchestrate the progressive ratchet of government. You have all these slushy funding streams. If they tried to do this by legislation where people actually had to propose bills that said, like, we'd like $60 million to house illegal immigrants in luxury hotels in Manhattan, the public would be outraged. So the way this has worked, especially since the 1970s, is they enact this vague legislation that creates these big pots of money, and then these unaccountable, faceless bureaucrats steer money to progressive causes and progressive non-government organizations, and that's how the scam works. So what they're upset about is that what Musk is doing more than anything else is shining a light on all this stuff, and from not only Trump's perspective, but from the perspective of those of us who are concerned about the administrative state and the implications for self-governance, the only way you're ever going to turn this around is by legislation. You know, Trump can do what he can do, but the next president can undo what he does. The way to do this is to expose it so the public gets outraged by it, and then that creates both the pressure and the people who would be willing to legislate, which is a big problem.
Right. So here's the judges have blocked Trump's agenda in this way. First, I'll go through one by one. The federal employee buyout offer. So they offer 6 month severance, essentially. Want to resign? Yeah, 2.3 million people. It's too many. 60,000 plus have said, I'll take that offer. But I guess some of the AGs sued, and it's now a judge is putting that on ice. Who's got the legal advantage?
Well, this is, it's outrageous in a number of ways, not least that the lawsuit is really brought, Brian, by unions for government employees, which FDR, of all people, like the father of progressive governance in the United States, he warned that you can't have government unions because they'd be a disaster. But Kennedy allowed them beginning in the early 60s. And, you know, here you have 60,000. I think it'll be closer to 100,000 because most people in the government are procrastinators like I am. You know, they weren't going to decide until the last day probably. So I think the numbers, whenever we know what the last day is, the numbers will go up. But you have government unions in there fighting against government employees who want to take the deal, which is
crazy.
Ridiculous.
Right. And why would Democrats get behind this? I mean, I want them to not take a buyout deal?
Because for the same reason, Brian, that you teed this up with. They like there being, 2.3 million government employees and all these jobs. And they like the idea that the president doesn't run the executive branch. That was like Senator Murphy, who you played that clip from. You know, his idea that the president is trying to take over the government. Well, no, he's trying to take over the executive branch, which he's the only one, constitutionally speaking, who has power. And the whole issue here, which is a profound issue, is does the president really control the executive branch? Can he fire people? We know he can fire political appointees at will, but why shouldn't he be able to fire everyone in the executive branch, since under the Constitution,
the president's the only one who has power in the executive branch.
So then what about access to Treasury data? And we know that the Secretary of Treasury, Bessent, said, guys, Doge, take a look at our bills in and out. What's coming in, what we're expending, and they're finding things. So now they say it's not right that personal data is going to be exposed to unelected officials. Well, there's only two people elected, the president and vice president. So how does anyone ever look at anything?
Yeah, it's amazing that Democrats don't like unelected officials with unchecked power. Who knew? You know, who knew? Well, you know, look, I think Judge Engelmeyer's decision here is the most atrocious one of all the ones that we've seen, and I expect it'll be reversed on appeal. The idea that the president, the secretary of the Treasury, and people that they appoint can't examine executive branch sensitive information because it's too sensitive is just, I mean, to state the proposition is to refute it. It's so absurd. So I would think the Court of Appeals will overrule that one.
Transfer trans women inmates to men's prisons. There's been a remarkable people who commit a crime and realize they're the wrong gender. Whoever thought that would be linked? But they're sticking up for that because Democrats want to make sure that criminals get to, I think it's something like 90% of male criminals get to change genders and stay in prison with women.
Yeah, but I think, Brian, you probably follow this more closely than I do, but I think they're preening for their base, and it's yet another symptom of the Democrats having sort of got themselves into a political corner that's very unhelpful for them.
For them,
like
yeah.
they can't seem to resist like anything the trans people want. They're so intimidated by them that you know they take whatever position they're told to take. But the rest of the country is looking at this, and most of this stuff, as somebody smarter than me says, is these are 80 to 20 issues. You know, Trump is smart to be staying on, you know, issues where the vast majority of the country, including the majority of Democrats, is with him. Nobody thinks there should be men in women's prisons any more than they think there should be men on women's sports teams. So, you know, if the Democrats keep wanting to go to bat with people whose causes are extremely unpopular in the country, I think Trump will be delighted to let him do it.
So the constitutional argument of birthright citizenship is something I think the country could use to debate, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
I agree with that.
And you guys talk about this in law school, I imagine, all the time. You could argue both sides of this issue.
That's what they pay me for, Brian,
right?
Because if you want to get paid, you have to be able to argue both sides of the issue. Right?
It, exactly. But I'm just saying but if you have that, I mean, this is never – nobody thinks that this was written. So people can come over here on vacation and have a kid and then make him an American or come have a kid, non-citizens have a kid, and they have a citizen when that kid is born, that kid becomes a citizen. That's not what it was meant for. But it's being abused that way.
Right. It was meant to make sure that black Americans in the post-slavery era had the full benefits of citizenship under the Constitution. That was a specific problem that it was directed to. I think, the interesting thing to me from a constitutional law perspective out of this is that I think the policy that Trump is pushing is the correct policy. You shouldn't be able to, you know, if you're in the United States in hostility to our laws, if you're violating the law by being here, you shouldn't get the benefit of being able to, transmit American citizenship to your children.
Right.
That seems obvious. On the other hand, the main Supreme Court precedent, the one Kim R case from 1898, cuts in the other direction. So if this is going to get undone, they're going to have to revisit the main Supreme Court precedent that addresses this issue.
Right.
So it's knotty.
So two things. I got to go through credit. USAID workers layoffs. They're battling that. The president's already told them, took down the sign, gave up the lease, told them don't come to work. He did the same thing with his consumer division. It said you don't have a job, 1,700 people, don't come to work. That was set up by Elizabeth Warren under Barack Obama, and now they're going to fight it. So your thoughts on both the Consumer Protection Agency does not work and USAID being folded into state, much smaller workforce.
Yeah, I think on the USAID, I thought Trump picked the right flashpoint to have this debate, because going back to the founding of constitutional governance, going back to the writings of Jefferson and John Marshall, the president has almost plenary control over foreign relations. So, like, if he had picked a different area, if he had decided we're going to dismantle the Department of Education first, that would be a big problem. That's domestic spending. There's a lot more justification for Congress coming in and regulating it and funding it and standing up a bureaucracy. On the other hand, foreign relations is – the president has control over foreign relations, and he should be able to dictate spending priorities and what personnel he needs to carry them out.
So walk me through this then. So these judges appointed by Democrats mostly are standing in his way on this. Like, how does that break?
Well, I think ultimately he wins, but he may have to, you know, he may have to fight a few rounds. We've seen that a number of times, right? They try to bring these cases in a strategic way where they're likely to get Obama or Biden appointed judges. I think the judge in one of these cases is also a Clinton appointed judge. But, you know, then the cases go up the chain, and the courts of appeals, you're going to get a better quality of justice in. And the Supreme Court, I think, is going to be sympathetic to the president's foreign relations power. And they may also be sympathetic on the other issue that you asked me about, the Consumer Protection Board. That's a cockamamie organization, constitutionally speaking. It's not funded by Congress, which is how all government entities are supposed to be funded. And, you know, the Supreme Court ruled a couple of years ago that its mechanism for how board members get approved was unconstitutional. They said the president had to be able to remove them. And in that case, Justice Thomas and Justice Gorsuch said, why are we pulling up short here? This whole thing is a constitutional monstrosity. We need to address it. And they have campaigned for this idea that, you know, you have to reverse a case called Humphrey's Executor from the FDR era, the 1930s, which is the first one where the court kind of greenlighted these so-called independent agencies, meaning independent of any branch of government and violative of separation of powers. And all these agencies that have protections that don't allow the president to remove people, even though they exercise executive power. So there's a lot of constitutional anomalies about that organization. And I think ultimately, if it's in front of the Supreme Court again, we may see it get shot down.
Eric Adams said that, you know, basically the president has told his Department of Justice to tell the Southern District of New York, stop prosecuting Eric Adams for these crimes. He believes it hurt the 20, it's hurting him in the 2025 primary. And then other people say has a lot to do with the fact that he's being targeted like he feels he was because he stood up to President Biden on when it comes to illegal immigration. Does that have legal standing? Does, right? You can't touch that, can you?
Well, I think it's a preposterous argument, but he won. You know, Trump decided to tell the Justice Department to drop the case. I think it's a terrible precedent, and it's a signal of bad things to come. But look, they said when Trump was being prosecuted by Bragg, what he said again and again and again was that the independent expert prosecutors at the Southern District of New York, whose competence couldn't be questioned, examined this case and found that I didn't do anything worthy of prosecution and basically wouldn't bring a case against me. So he touted the objectivity, the reputation, and the analytical prowess of the Southern District of New York when it was to his advantage to compare that to Bragg. Now we have Eric Adams' case. The prosecutor who he's accusing of or who the Justice Department is suggesting may have brought the case for political reasons, the U.S. attorney, is gone. Biden is gone. The office is now being run by people that, even according to the memo Bove sent out, their integrity can't be questioned. They just submitted a letter to the judge like a week ago saying that the case against Adams is very strong and it has nothing to do with politics.
All right, Andy, but he's doing it anyway, so you just calling it like you see it. Andy McCarthy, thanks so much. Back in a moment.
Increasing your intelligence quotient.
What the hell did you just say?
It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
You want to make America great again? You can't skimp on the details.
President Trump says he's going to reverse Joe Biden's mandate to phase out plastic straws, saying, enjoy your next drink without a straw that disgustingly dissolves in your mouth.
Okay, he's right on this one. He is right on this one. Those straws are f***ing terrible. Objectively terrible. I'm supposed to have some weird tissue paper dissolve in my mouth just because turtles can't figure out straws aren't food? No. Don't eat the tubes, you stupid turtles.
Right. That was funny. I thought that was great last night. Monday nights, you got to laugh. Just like with Bill Maher, I don't think that Jon Stewart says as objective as Bill Maher, who's still a liberal, still anti-Trump, but he just points out some stuff that Democrats are doing that are crazy, and I think Jon Stewart found that way too. So, I mean, they kind of know Kamala Harris was terrible. They know Joe Biden was dead on arrival. So they don't even have a talented politician now that could give him something to fight with. He's even ripped Chuck Schumer. He says, can we get Chuck Schumer out of the way? So I find that honest and refreshing. For the rest of the monologue,
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
They ought to be returned by 12 o'clock on Saturday, and if they're not returned, all of them, not in drips and drabs, not two and one and three and four and two, Saturday at 12 o'clock, and after that, I would say all hell is going to break out.
And that is President Trump yesterday taking questions and the frustration he has that Americans and Israelis can certainly reflect. And that is that these guys take hostages. They kill over 1,000. They take hundreds of hostages. There's as many as 70 left. Sadly, probably only a third are still alive, two of which are Americans. And then we find out the conditions that they are so much worse than anyone thought. They look like they're coming out from the Holocaust. It looks like a 1940s, if you could colorize the film, after Allied troops liberated what was left of these concentration camps. And Trump is as horrified by this and said what he said. How is that resonating? I know with one American hostage family from Teaneck, New Jersey, Tenafly, New Jersey, today, she said she was glad, both the father and mother were glad that the plight of their son is being brought up because they felt as though it was being ignored and Israel is being condemned. Greg Palcott will tell us the truth. He's on the ground there, the Fox News' foreign policy correspondent. Hey, Greg, what are your thoughts or what do you report and what do you think is the receptiveness of the Trump comments?
Well, Brian, thanks for having me. Yes, they are resonating here for sure. As you explained to your listeners, last Saturday's display of the latest three hostages that were being released by Hamas horrified not just Israel, but I think a lot of people all around the world, gaunt, sickly. They look like, yes, they look like we're back in World War II era, and that shook everyone up. And I think it's because of that we have seen so much activity in so many different areas dealing with the hostages. As you already noted, President Trump expressed his frustration with the whole process and said, we want everybody out by Saturday. Remember, your listeners have to remember that there is a ceasefire hostage deal that allegedly goes on for many, many weeks, and at least three or sometimes more hostages will come out every week. And this is tied into givebacks by Israel to Hamas, or at least the people of Gaza, in terms of humanitarian aid and other aspects. But right now, that's in a bit of a mess, Brian, because number one, Hamas is saying that they might not release the next three planned hostages on Saturday because Israel is reneging on aspects of the deal, like bringing in enough humanitarian aid and other aspects of the arrangement.
Well,
and
they blew up a weapons depot, right? Didn't they blow up a weapons depot in Gaza?
I'm sorry?
Did the Israelis blow up a weapons depot in Gaza?
Yeah, they have been active on several fronts, and that's another reason why Hamas is saying, hey, listen, Israel, this is supposed to be a ceasefire, but Israel's saying, well, it's not a ceasefire as long as Hamas is acting up. We just saw a security cabinet meeting led by Prime Minister Netanyahu wrap up, and we're waiting probably in the next hour for some kind of an answer from them. They will, I am sure, say they are living up to their end of the bargain, and they want the hostage releases to continue. But I got to tell you, in a lot of corners here, there's a lot of nervous people about the state of the situation right now.
Well, how about the fact that the conditions on those hostages was so jarring? I mean, there's been five rounds of hostage dismissal. They've given over 700 Palestinian prisoners over for 21 hostages. The next exchange is in, I guess, 4 days by noon. The president wants them all out. That's unlikely. And he says, sadly, many of them are dead. We do know that has to be the case. So you wonder how the president could back up noon at noon Saturday as the drop dead date. I guess he could say to Netanyahu, I know you're reluctant to do this anyway, so go in there and just finish the job.
Yeah, I think it's something like that. I've got two answers to your point, Brian. First, about President Trump, he has said that it is his opinion, that it is his resolution that everybody should get out by Saturday. But he also said that Israel might have another word on it, and that at the end of the day, it's Israel that will have to give them all hell and a few other things that President Trump explained. So in fact, he's stating an opinion, but it's not necessarily a policy. But my second answer to your question is, Brian, we spent some time with families of hostages who have been released. We spoke to the sister of a 24-year-old Romy Gonen. She was released last month. And, of course, the sister, fine woman, Yarden, said that she was pleased about that. But she said something else. She said that none of us, even the families of the hostages that have been released, cannot relax, cannot rehabilitate until everybody is out. We feel like it is a family. And so she said, yes, and her words are exactly, I wish everyone will be released together on one day. And I said, so you mean Saturday at noontime? She said, yeah, but I'm worried, she said flatly, because Hamas are terrorists and they could try something else, Brian.
Absolutely. So how does President Trump's idea of having us take control of it and saying the Palestinians to Jordan and Egypt going over?
It's going over good in some quarters and other quarters not. I mean, I saw polls that are showing that the Israelis actually think it's a good idea because they have been through so much trial and tribulation in the last year and a half plus, but also, frankly, over the decades. And the idea of just like Gaza going away is appealing to, certain sectors of the population here, maybe more in the man on the street, maybe less depending on which political side you are. But I'm sure, as you've been explaining, and as your listeners know, it is not flying, this idea of Trump, the United States taking over Gaza, turning it into a real estate deal, kicking out a million or 2 million Palestinians, putting them in Jordan or Egypt. It's not going well at all with the neighboring countries and with other international bodies. But again, it's the kind of thing, Brian, I think we know by now. We've been through one term of it. This is 2.0. He says stuff, and he gets people thinking, and he gets people maybe coming up with other ideas. I know King Abdullah from Jordan is meeting with President Trump today, and the reporting is that he might offer his own idea, his own approach, King Abdullah, to President Trump. So, you throw spaghetti up against the wall, and you see what sticks, Brian.
So the president said yesterday, if Egypt and Jordan won't do it, well, maybe we're going to take away some aid. So, again, he always goes for the leverage portion of this. I was talking to one of these Qatar officials who was in the meetings brokering the peace. And I said the day after President Trump came up with that idea, and I go, is that hurting the peace process? He goes, no. He goes, we need new ideas. But here's the thing, which you know. And many people in America don't. We got enough history to study. Is that Jordan kicked out the Palestinians. Egypt kicked out the Palestinians. Egypt sealed their border rather than letting the Palestinians get out of the hellfire that they were going through in the response to October 7th attack, unprovoked attack. So they want no part of the Palestinians.
Yeah, I mean, they've got Jordan, in fact, has a pretty sizable Palestinian population from other crises. And at this point, King Abdullah, doesn't want one more, and President Sisi in Egypt, same way. And we're hearing strongly, too, from Saudi Arabia, of course, a very important ally, strategic partner for President Trump. And they're nixing it, too. But, one of the big projects, I think is pretty widely reported, of President Trump is getting Saudi Arabia involved with some kind of an Israeli peace deal to mirror the Abraham Accords from the first term.
Right.
So President Trump does not want to mess that up either. So he's playing an outspoken game, President Trump, but he also knows that this is a pretty tough and tangled neighborhood, Brian, and the landscape is changing day to day.
Go get him. Thanks so much. Greg Palcott always doing a great job in the war zones. Greg, thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
All right, when we come back, we'll talk about what the president spoke about to Bret Baier over the weekend, and also talk about the Democrats' attack on Trump. Will it be effective? You'll be interested to hear.
Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Pete Hegseth now in a press conference over in Stuttgart, Germany, where people are asking him questions. He's done more interviews and made himself more available over the last, since taking the job 2 weeks ago, than I think I saw Lloyd Austin in 4 years. This guy did nothing. And if he was doing some great stuff, he hit it well. So Pete went and did, the secretary went and did PT with the men and women in uniform today, and now he's hanging out, and he just got a question, why'd you do that? And his answer was interesting. He goes, I kind of connect more with them than I even do with the four-star generals. But let's go over to do a simulcast now. It's Stuart Varney,
well, it is
David Asman
now
sitting
10:51 here on the East Coast, and it is time for my friend Brian Kilmeade, who joins us. Brian, great to see you. Thanks for being here. Trump is telling Bret Baier that he wants to send education back to the states, something I care a lot about. I know you do as well. Let's listen to him and get your reaction. Roll it.
Tell Maxine and all of her friends that we're last in education out of 40 states. We're last. We're number 40. But we're number one in cost per pupil. I want to send education back to the states. You know, if you send education to Iowa and to Indiana and to a lot of these states that are so good, to Idaho, They have no debt. They have no crime. They have no this. They have no that. The same ones that are bad on crime and bad on everything probably would be bad on education. But they'd almost be forced to get better. If we did that, if we sent them back, our educational system would be double and it would cost probably half.
Brian, you agree?
I hope so. But I think that the states that were good are going to get great. And the states that are struggling will say, good, now I can go ahead and be politically correct. Now I can go ahead and put more money in and get better results. Now I can go ahead and really do what the union wants me to do. Teachers are great. The union isn't. So I worry about the bad getting worse and the good getting great. And I would love to have, like, I like the idea of Linda McMahon having a say in things. I like the idea of the Trump administration having a say in things. When you give the states that, just so you know, I think you're going to be unhappy with what the Los Angeles is doing. I think you're going to be happy with what San Diego and San Francisco are doing. I think you're going to be unhappy with what Chicago's doing. So I guess it could separate them more and make them change. But in a way, if you believe what Trump believes, which is school choice, you believe the ability to take charter schools, if you believe in all that, you're giving that up to a Democratic governor.
I would just make one point. I was a junior high school teacher in Chicago shortly after the Department of Education began. We were bribed we would get money from them if we used their teaching curricula, which was terrible. All of us teachers knew it was terrible, but if we didn't use it, we wouldn't get paid money. So there was this bribery going on. If you take away the bribery from the Department of Education, I think it could help local schools to make their own decisions, most of which I think are better than those being made inside the Beltway.
Well, what do you think about New York? You see the papers.
I was in
every
Chicago.
Day.
Chicago was just as liberal as New York, and the schools, the teachers knew what was working and they knew what wasn't working. Of course, this was decades ago, so maybe things have changed. You also have the all of this money, $100 in addition to Department of Education. COVID bills spent $189 billion for K-12 education. Do we know where that money went?
No.
It certainly didn't go in raising test scores, did it?
No, they didn't. We were separating desks 6 feet apart, and we were making kids walk on the other side of the hall, making them wear masks as five-year-olds wear masks. We know the idiocy of that. And I know we're not spending much. I would love to see some accountability. I mean, I see the charter schools and I see their effectiveness and I see it helps minority kids the most because they're mostly in schools that don't get the property tax value because that's where the money comes from. Mm-hmm. If they're in struggling areas, working class areas, they don't get it as you would in Beverly Hills or Westchester, New York. So having said that, then you have a chance to go to a charter school and then these cities deny these kids a chance at building up charter schools. So it's a frustrating situation where I like to see more overseeing than less because I don't trust them to do the right thing, in my view. But we'll see what happens. We're going to see what Linda McMahon's going to do. She's got to get confirmed, and then we're going to see her distribute her power.
Yeah. Well, we also have a push for more school choice programs from the federal government. I think that's a good thing, too. If you work it all out, it's got to be better than with the Department of Education. That's my humble opinion. As a former teacher, we got to leave it at that, Brian. I love you, man. Thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Back at
Enjoy your radio.
Talk to you soon.
See you.
All right, that's great. 1-866-408-7669. A couple other things I wanted to go over. We had the Daily Show yesterday, and of course, you had the Super Bowl on Sunday. I was able to go to the Super Bowl and see it. The Eagles fans. The game was a knockout early. If it was a fight, they would have given it to. As soon as the Chiefs couldn't do anything after halftime, I knew they were done. I wasn't going to see the comeback that Tom Brady put together in Atlanta to beat Atlanta like he did. After the Super Bowl, Jim Gaffigan spoke, one of the funniest comedians in America. Here's what he said. Cut 39.
I'm just not looking forward to next Sunday, the Sunday after Super Bowl Sunday. I guess you could say I view the Super Bowl as half empty. Next Sunday is going to be brutal. Those first couple Sundays after the NFL season are rough. I'm always a little lost. Suddenly the day has like 8 extra hours. I don't know what to do with all the time. NFL games are the background of my Sundays. The games are always on. The sound of crowds cheering, whistles blowing, and men grunting is comforting to me. If I want to hear the voices of Jim Nantz or Tony Romo, I'll have to watch golf or those horrible shoe commercials.
I just step in and go without touching my shoes.
Those first couple non-NFL Sundays feel less like Sundays and more like Monday Eves. Sundays just become the day before I have to wake up early to get my kids up to go to school. What do non-NFL fans even do on Sunday? Maybe it's an opportunity. I could go to church, but that would involve going outside and being around people. I could spend quality time with my children. Nah, they wouldn't want that either. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm sure I'll get through it, maybe.
Jim Gaffigan, was that from CBS? I sense that was from CBS in the morning. Well, he was a football player, by the way. He has his football pictures up there. So Jim Gaffigan said at the Al Smith dinner, I'll do an interview. Just wait till after the election. I waited for after the holidays. Do you think he's going to come through for me? I hope so.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
All right, here we go, everyone. From 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. Brian Kilmeade show. Bottom of the hour, Congressman Ben Klein will be with us. He is fed up with the congressman on this whole attack on Doge and the others. He's coming forward to go to bat for Elon Musk and his minions. Why? Because he's getting rid of waste. Please tell me where the Republican agenda is. And I think one of the best things that you could do if you're a Republican or Doge is if you see some pro-life programs accelerating through Africa, that's pretty much thought to be a Republican issue. Bring up, listen, this is not what the government's for. That's for what the churches are for. And even though I agree with that cause, I don't want to spend for that. At the same way you do the old LGBTQ, those parades and the Irish DEI play in Ireland. I'm pretty sure we all agree as a country, even though I'm half Irish, that I don't want to be paying for that. Chris Sununu is with me right now, the 82nd governor of New Hampshire, now the former governor. Dressed in a suit and tie. You're actually dressed up better now than you did when you were governor.
Because I have some casual. Sanity. I have some sanity put back into me, so I comb my hair
Before we get into the issues, what's the big difference?
Between anonymity, a little bit, right? I don't have security. I mean, my security guys were great, but when you're a governor, security's with you all the time. You're never in the car alone. You never have a minute of your thoughts alone or your staff is around you, and that can be helpful. But I'm down in New York for a couple of days. I actually handled my own calendar, my own phone calls, and it's more work, but I like it. I like, I don't want to say I'm a lone wolf, but just the anonymity and not having every eye on you all the time is a kind of a weight that I'm glad has been lifted.
So, we have a lot to discuss. I want to get to foreign policy too, but we know the President of the United States today, is pushing forward with big and small things. Number one, the biggest fight is the courts. We had about 5 court cases that are now holding up the Trump agenda when it comes to the letting go of USAID members, when it's coming to the Consumer Financial Protection Agency. He told 1,700 people don't come to work.
That's right.
All right?
And he has the right to do that, by the way.
And
he absolutely has that
and
right.
And he told, and through Doge, they said any federal worker of the 2.3 million, you have an option to get 6 months severance pay to short course. And you can leave. And 60,000+ said you can leave. And then the court said, let's put a hold on this. So you know the inside of politics. What do you do if you have a liberal judge holding up your agenda?
And that's happened to me. It's happened to every governor. So two things. First, all this gets what we call judge shopped, right? So the folks that are going to sue specifically go to Boston or specifically go to the districts that they know they're going to be the liberals are going to be successful in. Conservatives did it as well, right? When we challenged things on pro-life, typically we'd go to the Texas courts or whatever it was. So I hate the judge shopping. But that being said, I am a believer that you have to respect where the court is, but you challenge it, right? So what Trump is going to do is going to say, heck no, you guys all elected me to fight the system, to push back. I'm going to do that. But at the same time, they're going to go through the right legal process, challenge it up to the Supreme Court. It's happening very quickly, and that's a good thing. Trump wants that to happen. And two things will happen. The Supreme Court will say Trump was right. He can do what he needs to do. Or they'll say on this one, you know what? It can't be up. What Trump is doing isn't appropriate. So Congress, you go back, change the law, and we'll fix it. Every time something gets stopped in the courts, it's not dead. It's just the court telling Congress, fix the law. So what Trump is going to do is these ones that don't get ultimately his appeals that he doesn't win on, it's not a dead end, guys. It just means that Congress, he's going to then go back to Congress and and drive them to change the law, be more specific, and give him the power to do what he needs to do. And what he's really saying with all this, guys, is, hey, Washington, D.C., you've sat on your ass for 20 years. You haven't done it. We're going to do it. Right. And this is what America voted for.
Here's what Trump said about that to Brett. Cut eight.
19 states attorneys general filed a lawsuit, and early Saturday, a judge agreed with them to restrict Elon Musk and his government efficiency team, DOGE, from accessing Treasury Department payment and data systems. They said there was a risk of irreparable harm. What do you make of that? And does that slow you down on what you want to do?
No, I disagree with it 100%. I think it's crazy. And we have to solve the efficiency problem. We have to solve the fraud, waste, abuse, all the things that have gone in the government. You take a look at the USAID, the kind of fraud in there.
Yeah, he's right. He's absolutely. I think he's right, and I think he's going to win in the courts, but you got to drive it through the process.
So a couple of things with USAID. You're running as governor, but your dad's been in the federal government before for years, your brother, senator, right?
Yeah.
So Senator Joni Ernst says, in looking at USAID, it's been a problem. She tried to inquire about it when she was in the minority, and they just pushed back, said, you have no right asking. And when Governor Pataki was on with John Castamatidis over the weekend and said, USA needs to be broken up, and he said, I formed my own organization to help the Ukrainians. And I said, I got heaters here. I got all this stuff. How can you help me get it in? They didn't want to return a phone call. Then he inquired to people, what is America doing for you? And we're doing nothing. Yeah. Bureaucratic paper, promises that weren't fulfilled.
You've hit it right on the head. It started out as a good idea. It became an unaccountable bureaucratic mess. And they're saying, look, that's not saying USAID doesn't do great things. They do some very good things. But what they're going to do is make each sub-department within that organization come back and justify their existence.
They don't want to.
Yeah, they don't want to, but then now they have to. And, right. And I would do that as a governor, as an executive.
Doesn't it naturally belong in the State Department?
When you first,
yeah, it should absolutely.
There should nothing be unaccountable. When there's government dollars in there, there has to be accountability. Anytime I hear quasi-government agency, the hairs go up on the back of my neck.
So the USAID funded the bat research studies in the Wuhan lab.
Thank God.
Right?
USAID, a lot of good that did.
$9 million in aid for Syrians, right, during their whole civil war, most of which they said ended up in the hands of terrorists. Senator Joni Ernst said they looked back and they said in 2005, Congress caught the agency supporting an organization involved with trafficking of teenage girls.
It's amazing.
Further review, it even got worse. They said, oh, you got it wrong. So they did an investigation. It was actually worse than everyone thought.
And especially now look to the Middle East, because now you're talking about organizations that have ties to terrorism and Hamas and all this indirectly and directly, by the way. It's not a couple bucks here, guys. It's millions and millions and millions of dollars. Do you know whose money that is? It's yours. It's all your listeners. It's not the government's money. The government has one job, to manage your dollars.
Right.
Right. You worked for it. You spent time away from your family. You busted your butt to do that. And then we pay these taxes for good management of our dollars, and it has completely fallen on its face. And USAID is one, as bad as it is, it's one small piece of a much bigger pie, and Elon's going to keep going after it and keep going after it as he should.
See, and the listeners have heard me say this before, but until I read the book by Walter Isaacson on Elon Musk, when I realized he was going to be in the limelight, I just said, wait a second, he's building tunnels, he's putting chips in brains, he's going to space, and he has an electric car. What is going on here? But he isn't so much Da Vinci, who's his creative mind. He's also, as one of his gifts is manufacturing.
That's right, and optimization.
Optimization, and looking at labor force, and looking at and sleeping on the manufacturing floor and trying to get screws lighter. And I thought, outside Henry Ford, who I read about too, and you watch these documentaries, who's got that acumen? I don't even know where
That's right.
Get both. Usually the creativity is not with the forensic accountant.
And what he brings to the table is so unique, because I'm an engineer. I went to MIT. I'm an engineer, and you learn how to optimize. But what he has specialized in, don't optimize something that shouldn't have existed in the first place. So that's why he's starting with, what do we need to get rid of? Make it as efficient as possible, and then you optimize out of that.
So you looked at the budget too. To me, I'm sorry if this is boring, but I find it unbelievably interesting, because the lower we get the debt, the less interest we have to pay, the more money we can put to positive things in our country. And the number one expenditure in our country is how much in interest do we pay every
year? $1 trillion this year.
So what else? Just ask yourself, as you cut these programs, and this is what the administration should be saying more, in my humble opinion, what more could we do with $1 trillion?
Right.
And the answer is a lot.
And in about eight or nine years, the high interest rates we had about 2 or 3 years ago, we were borrowing money. And we're borrowing money at not 1% or 2% like we did in 2010. We're borrowing money at 5%, 6%, 7%, 8%. That interest rate comes due in 8 years. So our $1 trillion today goes to $1.8 trillion in interest, in nothing, if you will, in 8 years from now. At the same time, Social Security is about to go bankrupt. At the same time, Medicare is going to go bankrupt. It is an absolute cataclysmic car crash of economics that – frankly, both sides of the aisle. I blame Republicans as much as Democrats. And I'm more disappointed in Republicans because we should know better. They've ignored and been unwilling to do anything on this.
So we have the Consumer Financial Protection Agency, which was created by under Barack Obama by Elizabeth Warren's brainchild after the collapse of 2008. They thought the consumers weren't protected enough. Let's just say they did it for the right reasons. It's not working out. So you have 1,700 employees told not to come to work on Monday. And Monday's come and gone, and now they're trying to stop this from happening. USAID is stripped of its lease. Staffers turned away from the D.C. headquarters. This is bold. This is the type of thing that has to happen. It might be crass, but there's just no other minor way to do it.
That's right. Look, when you imagine sitting on the couch for 20 years, and it's nice. You get to sit on the couch. You don't do anything. But then you realize, I got to get in shape. You hire a trainer. On the first day, the trainer says, we're running 10 miles. Guess what? The first mile in, you go, oh, this sucks. This is hard. This is aggressive. But guess what? It's what you have to do. And that's where Congress has been. 20 years they've sat on the couch. And Trump and Elon are coming in saying, we're getting your butts off the couch and we're doing what no one's been willing to do.
So you know how hard it is to get over 50%. I don't care if you are. I think if you came back and you were Truman at the height, although he left a 20% approval rating, who was really popular? I guess FDR for a while was really popular. JFK wasn't. I did not know that until FDR was gone. But to have 53% approval rating is pretty important when you're making these bold decisions. For people under 30, according to CBS poll, he's at 55%. When was the last time a Republican was popular, more popular with people under 30 than over?
And in his, you could call it his fifth year of the presidency, right? Usually at this time is when a presidency is kind of hitting the low points, if you will. He's hitting the high point. And part of it is, look, his team figured out what to do in the first term. I would argue they didn't get nearly enough done and they didn't know how to work with Congress. But this team is very professional. And it's not just Trump. It's Susie Wiles. It's Miller. It's the team he's put around him. They're not just taking ideas. They're very strategic and they're very aggressive. And there is a long-term plan on both the international side, on the DOGE side, on the balanced budget side. I mean, we talked about this a little before the show. For the first time that I've ever seen on Friday, Donald Trump tweeted the words balanced budget. He really rarely talks like that ever.
Right.
But he's actually tweeting it out now saying, guys, this is the heart of what is going to ensure on a growth model for American businesses and stability and a lack of waste with our government dollars going forward.
Yeah, to balance this segment, we're going to take a short time out so I don't take too much from the next segment. Democrats are aggressively going after him. They always would be a counterargument, but it seems to be nothing short of hysterical.
They're flailing. They're absolutely flailing.
Governor Kristi Noem, my guest, back in a moment.
We're going to win so much, you may even get tired of winning.
Taking back America, the first 100 days.
You say, please, please, it's too much winning.
Stay with Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
One thing I did last night that's very powerful.
Really?
The straw. They gave us a paper straw. It melts. It's horrible. They should make it in flavors because by the time you finish, it is so horrible. I ended the paper straw. We're going to go back to plastic.
That might be a 90-10 issue.
It's about a 99.
No one loves the soggy straw.
Right. And then you're talking about that's what President Trump did. He also has to get more water in the toilet.
Look,
he says it's too
I'll take
low.
Water in the toilet. I'll get rid of the side. My big one is daylight savings time. I hope that's on his list of one of the next things to do because it was a concept created by Benjamin Franklin, for God's sakes. It's so outdated. It's a big mess. It causes confusion. Let's just get rid of it once and for all.
All right. How do you feel about the Gaza idea? Number one, if by noon, if we don't get all the hostages back, president's on the clock on that. Did give himself an out. He said if the prime minister.
Yeah, Israel has to drive that, right? Yeah.
Right. But he just said, I've had it. They look like they're from the Holocaust. I'm not going to tolerate this. This is another kind of inhuman.
So a couple things there. I don't think he should have put this by Saturday type thing. I'm not sure what that really means. It probably just means the ceasefire is over and they have to structure a new deal. I don't think people
are supposed to get four out this weekend.
And what condition are they in, right? I mean, we're getting to the hostages now that are probably in the worst condition. I think it's going to be a bit shocking when the world sees the condition of the hostages as they're released.
Considering they were putting babies in ovens,
it's just awful story. But I'll let me back up a little bit. I think Trump is playing a classic Trump negotiating strategy on all of this. I think there is a plan here when he talks about, well, all these other countries are going to take the refugees. And they say, well, no, we're not. And he says, well, okay, then you're going to pay to rebuild Gaza. Oh, wait. And if you don't do it, I'll do it. Oh, wait. So what he's really doing, he's forcing them to all say, okay, this guy's very serious. And they now have to be better neighbors, if you will. One of the reasons the Palestinian crisis got so bad is because the Saudis and the Jordanians ignored the Palestinian people for years. They did participate. They did help keep Hamas out of the neighborhood, so to say, and crisis hit. And so what Trump is going to do over a series of moves is force them to the table to invest their dollars, help rebuild Gaza, and thereby they now have an interest to keeping the terrorist element out.
I think you know why the president won Michigan.
Yeah, that's it. Dearborn.
He went into those areas with a tougher message on Israel. Didn't trumpet it, but he said when asked, he goes, you know my record. But he has nothing against – he understands they have a point of view. How do I help you practically?
That's right.
But he did that with a guy that was trying to split the difference, who was actually tougher on Israel than you would think, tougher than Obama probably, supportive in one way, tough the other way. But yet here's another guy who is more pro-Israel than any – according to Netanyahu, than anyone else. And he made inroads in the Arab areas, Muslim areas. So let me ask you something, Governor Sununu. How do you continue to make inroads in those areas while being very pro-Israel? So I would keep a dialogue going, number one.
So two things. If you're talking about the politics of this within the United States, it's always going to – he's very pro-Israel, but he still doesn't do well with the Jewish American vote.
It's crazy.
Why? Because pro-choice is a big thing. Right. With Jewish American population,
which is crazy because they've almost exterminated. That was Hitler's goal.
But again, here in the U.S., there's a different set of priorities. They care about the Israel issue, but it's not their top priority. Much like many of the Arab population here, they're business. They're entrepreneurs. They want the economy back on track. They believe in hard work and personal responsibility. And that is a connection to them, not just what's happening in the Middle East.
Okay. Lastly, Department of Education. I'm kind of worried about getting rid of it. If you're upset about – here's why. If I'm upset about the way Los Angeles is teaching and New York City is teaching and Chicago's teaching, why would I relinquish more control over that or influence?
Yeah. I'll explain it. So first, there is – someone has yet to explain to me what the value add of the Federal Department of Education is. They have no value add. And as much as I agree with you, I think California has a bad record of running education and what they want to put in. I do believe the more you localize the dollars and localize the control, you empower parents to have a stronger voice on the school boards. Now the school boards are going to have more say. The state's going to have more say. As a governor, I can tell you they hand you a bunch of federal money, but you have to spend it this way, this way, this way. You got to let a little bit of the pain happen. You have to let some of the local mistakes happen to get the feedback response system and the local change. There's no change in Washington.
You're acknowledging it could get worse before
it could
get
worse to get better. And sometimes that has to happen. When I was governor, some Republicans asked me to pass laws to force some of my smaller, more liberal districts to do X, Y, and Z that I believed in very strongly. But the importance of maintaining local control, the discipline of knowing the limits of your power.
Did you, by the way?
No, I let the districts do what they needed to do. And guess what? The parents had more say. The school boards had to listen. And everything ultimately started flipping the right way. So you have to – if you're looking for an immediate solution because we're politically correct, you know, we're right on the issue, that's a short-term win. You're also now setting a precedent for the next Democrats to come in and do the same thing to you. You don't want that.
You know, and we only have 10 seconds. You know when the door is closed, Democrats go, this hurts minorities. We don't let school choice happen.
Oh, they totally get it.
Minorities.
No.
And Republicans
school choice
right
is the most
on this.
Empowering thing for minorities and people of color. It's awesome.
Governor Chris Sununu, good luck in the private world. You're adjusting well.
I'm adjusting okay. I'm loving this. Let's go.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Elon Musk, where are you? Bring your ass over here so you can see who's here.
This is like a bank robber trying to fire the cops and turn off the alarms just before he strolls into the lobby. We are here to fight back.
We're going to shut down Elon Musk's illegal operation.
So we will see you in Congress, in the courts, and in the streets.
So Donald Trump, what does that say about you? You don't have power, but we have people power, and we're coming after you. We're coming after you with our people power.
So those are Democrats who feel as though cutting the budget with a $39 trillion debt is a bad thing. They don't want to defend the individual programs, which are indefensible, and the agencies, which are totally unhinged with the USAID and the Consumer Financial Protection Division from the second it started. I heard people just saying what a waste of money it is, and they told 1,700 people to stay home. One person is fed up with the attacks from the left, Congressman Ben Klein. Of Vermont, and he from Virginia, excuse me, and he joins us now. Congressman, welcome back. Okay, I don't know if I. Okay, I guess Congressman, we just disconnected with him, but that's a little bit. So what he's trying to do is get over the fact that people don't like Elon Musk. They feel as though they didn't elect him. They think he's too powerful, and he's extremely confident. They don't like the fact that he found $88 million in 89 departments of the education contracts, which were nobody knew about. They don't like that in 29 departments of education, they found $101 million worth of DEI grants. They didn't like that. They didn't like from FEMA, they found $59 million. After Trump gave the order out to freeze funding, they said FEMA got $59 million for New York City hotels to house migrants. While Donald, by the way, while Joe Biden ignored that plea from the mayor at the time, they didn't like that $17 million went to a project giving tax policy advice to Liberia. I'm not kidding. $17 million, $9 million for the Central American Gender Assessment Services. So please tell me, Democrats, or anybody who's critical of Elon Musk, what the problem is. What program do you want to see funded? How about $9 million for Central American Gender Assessment Services and $1.5 million to observe operations at a mail center? So Musk has been putting that forward on X. He's been talking about it on camera and he's been taking a lot of hits. I don't think it really bothers him. My worry is that he's going to quit. And as Trump even said, he goes, I don't know why he does it. I don't know how he finds the time. Congressman Ben Klein joins us now. Congressman, you're fighting back against these attacks on DOGE. Why does it matter?
Brian, it matters because we're finally delivering on what Trump promised the American people he would deliver back when he ran last fall, to actually deregulate and get the waste, fraud, and abuse out of the federal bureaucracy. He's getting it done. The left is fighting back, but we want to support him.
Right. Why don't they just bring up the programs that they want to keep? Out of those programs, I just ran down some of these programs. Which ones do they feel good about? They want to worry about gender studies, and they want to focus on investment opportunities in Liberia. Do we want to do this stuff?
You know, that's just it. They are used to things rolling along and not having to defend the indefensible. And now that things are being brought out, how taxpayer dollars are being wasted on these liberal woke programs, not only are the American people getting upset, the left is getting outraged that the shining light of transparency is hitting their beloved liberal programs.
So look at this. You have they found DOGE uncovered $2.3 million program training soldiers to speak and act in a DEI-friendly way for $2.3 million. I'd be upset if it was a free program, but can you believe our soldiers are being taught this? So what is the big deal about finding out where this money's being spent? This way, we have to at one point restructure Social Security and Medicare. But this is the stuff, a lot of the stuff I thought we could agree on. Do you think the administration could approach this differently, or do you think Democrats are just looking for something to unload about?
Well, I think that even if the administration approached this in a way where they reached out to the left and said, let's talk about whether this program is really necessary, you would get essentially what we've gotten, what Congress has gotten over the last several years that we've been, Republicans have been in the majority, which is essentially pushback. They have sought to get in the way of our efforts to get the information we need to account for taxpayer dollars. So they would do it again. They would just
avoid having to have any accountability for these programs, and they would continue along as they have been. This way, Trump is getting to the bottom of it. And yes, if it outrages some liberals, and if they want to go have a protest in front of an administration building, which, by the way, they don't have the right to enter because it's a different branch of government. But if they want to go protest in front of it, that they have that right. But no, we need to get to the bottom of it, and Trump is doing it exactly the right way.
So, as you know, President Trump sat down with Bret Baier over the weekend, at which time Democrats, and I watch everything and I read everything, and they're trying to say the Time magazine with Elon Musk behind the Resolute desk, and they're trying to separate Musk from Trump. But the reports are they're even closer than before, and it's not going to work. Trump was asked about this. Listen, cut seven.
The people, look, I ran on this, and the people want me to find it. And I've had a great help with Elon Musk, who's been terrific.
Bottom line, you trust him.
Trust Elon? Oh, he's not gaining anything. In fact, I wonder how he can devote the time to it. He's so into it. But I told him do that. Then I'm going to tell him very soon, like maybe in 24 hours, to go check the Department of Education. He's going to find the same thing. Then I'm going to go to the military. Let's check the military. We're going to find billions, hundreds of billions of dollars of fraud and abuse.
So there's no divide between them. How do you characterize their relationship?
Hey, the quarterback needs an O-line, needs block and tackle to move the ball forward. Trump is moving the ball forward, but he needs people like Elon to get out there and actually confront the left and, as you say, actually bring to light all of the wasteful spending. And, yes, it will outrage them, and they'll push back. But if we keep driving, if we keep unveiling all of this waste, fraud, and abuse, we're going to be able to move the ball forward and save the taxpayer dollars and be able to extend tax cuts for working families and lower prices for the American people. It's all a plan that Trump has worked out, and it's progressing very, very well. And we just need to support him in Congress. And we can do that with the DOGE subcommittee, with, Chairwoman Green, and she's going to have a hearing this week. All of the different committees of jurisdiction are providing this air support for the president's efforts, and we're going to continue to support him.
So you're on the Judiciary Committee, Congressman Ben Klein, and you know the president of the United States getting extremely frustrated with these judges that are freezing a lot of his efforts, whether it's to give federal workers 6 months severance to leave. 60,000 plus have said, yes, I'll do it. He also challenged in the court to freeze foreign funding, to get rid of USAID. Courts are frustrating them, and they're picking the courts to go through this. What's the right way and the right strategy for the executive branch to get their agenda forward legally?
Well, they want to continue to have the support of great attorneys like Attorney General Pam Bondi, whose team is going to provide that support to the administration as they are confronted with lawsuits and with the courts, the judges who are pushing back. But ultimately, this is not like anything we've seen before. It's not like anything that these judges have seen before. But once they look at the laws, look at what is being done, Elon Musk is a private person, but he's been hired legally by the federal government under Title 18. And there's been a separate administrative agency that's been renamed that he is working with, and these people who he's working with have been hired as government employees to actually do the work. So they're going to find that it's all being done legally, but they're just a lot of these judges are used to things working a certain way. And now that we're changing the way that things are being done, they'll eventually realize that it's all legal. Hopefully most of them will. And at the very least, our Supreme Court should.
And by the way, you put out a letter. It's on FoxNews.com to explain to everyone what is really going on there. I want to change gears if I could. So Tom Holman accused the FBI last night of putting officers' lives at risk by leaking ICE details about where the next raids are. Can you believe this? The FBI is turning on ICE?
Well, you've seen what's happened within the FBI over the last several years under the Biden administration, targeting Donald Trump targeting conservatives, whether you're trying to express yourself at a school board meeting, practice your religion as a Catholic, you know, the FBI is targeting conservative viewpoints. So for them to actually turn on ICE and say, well, we're going to, one woke liberal that's still dug in the FBI is releasing this information secretly, it's going to come to light. This person will be fired and prosecuted, quite frankly.
I think it's more than one. I mean, so now you got to count on, he says for the raids that they want to do on the West Coast, they're going to need the FBI with them. ICE can't do it alone. How do you know if you could trust them? I mean, someone tipped them off on a raid in Colorado. So, I mean, once Kash Patel gets in there, do you have to wait for that to happen? Would you wait on that raid until they get the person in place that's going to be in control of the division?
Well, we know that California and Colorado and other liberal states are harboring illegal immigrants. They are, and we need to get in there and make sure that those people are removed and repatriated to their countries of origin. But start where you can. And, you know, we are not going to be able to depend on local law enforcement to assist with the detection and removal of these illegals, so in states like California. So we are going to have federal law enforcement active. And hopefully by the time that we get to California, after we've removed from states like Texas, like Florida, where we do have cooperating, aiding state and local law enforcement, that we will have an FBI that is able to go in and do the job, and you don't have to worry about agents who are either going to leak information or not do the job.
So, Congressman, just looking at Virginia for a second before I let you go, you have a big governor's race coming up this year, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's going to be a good one.
Is that going to be a bellwether on how Trump's policies are successful or not? Virginia, it leans left, obviously. Glenn Youngkin broke that cycle this time. What about Winsome Sears? She gets the nomination, goes forward.
Well, Winsome Sears is a great candidate. She, you know, breaks all the molds. She's definitely a fighter and definitely energizing the grassroots in much in the same way that Donald Trump did, much in the same way that Glenn Youngkin did. And she's traveling out to rural parts of Virginia to make sure that base is energized and motivated. What you're going to find is that in Northern Virginia, you're going to have a lot of federal employees who are losing their jobs, who are going to reflexively turn against Trump and Republicans. They are Democrats for the most part. They vote Democrat. Whether they're energized to turn out and take out their frustrations about losing their job on Winsome Sears, who is running at the state level and doesn't have any responsibility for their jobs as federal government employees, remains to be seen. But I'm optimistic that she can communicate with these people in a way and make sure that we win in Northern Virginia. We're going to win in Richmond. We're going to win in Tidewater. She breaks through so many different barriers, being the first female African-American lieutenant governor in Virginia history. She will be the first female governor in Virginia history, the first female African-American governor in Virginia history.
All right. Go get him. Congressman Ben Klein, thank you.
Hey, thanks, Brian.
All right. We're going to finish up with your calls. 1-866-408-7669. You want to write me, do it. BrianKilmeade.com. Quick announcement for everybody over in Texas, anyone in the area. I'm on KLIF, 570 KLIF, and you know me. From this show, you know me from Fox and Friends. I'm going to be at the Community Beer Company in Dallas on the I-35 North Stem Mons Freeway and Commonwealth Drive, 6 to 8 on, wow, it's coming up, Wednesday, February 26. It's free. We're going to go out to have an open forum. We're going to broadcast it. It's going to be great. So if you're in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, I hope to see you in person. When we launched there a year ago, I came out, and I hope to see everybody again. We'll definitely have some special guests down there. And hey, how bad could it be? The Community Beer Company sounds fantastic. Back in a moment.
Taking America back.
Canada's been very abusive of the United States for many years.
One ally at a time.
It is an act of economic warfare.
The trade imbalance and our trade deficit has gone up 200%+.
Hey, Panama! Hey, Panama!
With Brian Kilmeade.
Yeah.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
First of all, oh my God, it shut him up, even for just a second. I think airplane pilots must be the most powerful force in the universe. I feel like the Democrats have to get themselves an airplane pilot.
But you can't do that.
Maybe they'll let Schumer. Schumer will be the pilot. But forgive me, I seem to have forgotten. What does calling it Gulf of America do? Do we get all its fish now?
Make America great again, right? That's what we care about.
Making America great again. Yeah.
Yeah. He just can't handle it. On the way to the Super Bowl, he flew over Gulf of America and officially named it. And they had Doug Burgum there, the Secretary of the Interior, make it official. So that's kind of funny. That was the Daily Show. We already played the other cut, which is pretty funny. So there's a lot going on. If you look at the Super Bowl, by the way, had 126 million people watch, but they have all this streaming, and I can't believe how many people watched while they were streaming. Actually, total 137.7 million. They said if you had it, all the viewership hit 152 million at 8:16, which is like 2.5 hours in. And they just go over some detail about how everything's changed so much. Also, Nike won over the ad industry. They crowned it the best commercial. Did you guys see the Nike commercial by any chance? Evidently, it was the first. It's an honor they give out every year to the most creative Super Bowl commercial. It's the Weed and Kennedy people who did all the funny ESPN commercials. They said it was pitch-perfect pacing, script, and messaging of strength. The brand returned to the Super Bowl first time in 27 years. So these are some of the issues that are coming out over this. And the fact is, I think it just shows you, too, streaming up made up of 49% of the audience on the Super Bowl, 41% last year. Tubi, which is Fox's, 18.7%. YouTube and YouTube TV, 12.8%. Other streamers, 17%. So everything's changing, but people still want to watch football. I don't think they'll ever put it behind a paywall. Hey, don't forget, I'll be on stage this Saturday night. I hope you join me in Jacksonville. The VIP went over 100. We're opening up the balcony now because we're beyond sold out, but they're opening up some tickets for us. So go to BrianKilmeade.com. We'll be at the Florida Theater, which is 99 years old, historic. And then St. Louis, March 22nd.
I'm Emily Campagno, host of the Fox True Crime Podcast. This week, author and criminal justice reform advocate Toby Doerr joins me to discuss how she smuggled the man she loved out of prison.
Listen and follow now at foxtruecrime.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.